Welcome to Fright School. Are you ready? Class is in session. Welcome back to Fright School. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Joshua.
Oh, this is so exciting. We're here in the... We've been kind of trading on and off, doing some things remote, and sometimes in the here in the Wes Craven Memorial Library, which is where we are today. And I'm so excited because the microphone cords. So I have to, like... I have to be careful not to hit this a million times.
You know what? We're having like a flashback moment because we're recording in like the old setup.
This is. We're like, I don't know. I feel like the last 10 episodes, it feels like every time we do it differently.
I know. It's like we're still figuring it out. You know, what, 6 years later, we're still figuring
right,
shit out.
Right. It's like, okay, we'll record this in Zoom. We'll record this in a Zencaster. We'll record this through the microphones. Let's bust out like an old school mixer and like some reel to reel, you know? Let's go like old school. And you'll have to like stay up all night cutting and trimming, you know, the tape together.
I know. If anyone wants to give us studio time and an engineer, we'll take that too. So, you know, I'm happy to do that as well.
Yeah. And it's funny because you listen back and it all sounds exactly the same, like to me, you know what I mean? To like my ears.
But except for that one episode where I sounded like Jigsaw the entire time.
I'm not sure why that happens.
I was like, I wonder if anyone's like, are they ever going to address the fact that Joe wanted to play a game with Joshua that whole time?
I mean, I wrote it in the, I think in the show notes. I was like, I don't know what is happening. We can't explain it. And that happens.
And we're not going to re-record. So.
No, every now and again that happens. And it's just, hey, you know what? If people are just like, I cannot listen to this episode because Joe sounds, he sounds too mask for mask. I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Skipping it.
Oh my gosh.
And that's on us.
I'm like wearing my original headphones.
Yeah.
Which are really great.
Yeah, they've been here throughout like the pandemic. You left them and then never came back for them. And I was like, well, I'm holding them hostage then.
Well, I'm glad that you used them because they're really nice. But I mean, again, it out of necessity, I bought myself other headphones too. And I mean, I don't know. I feel like I have like... I don't know if this is like hashtag podcaster problems where it's like you have all these different cords and headphones and microphones for everything.
Yeah. Well, it's musician problems too. You know, I mean, I've got mics everywhere. I redid part, you know, for fun, like during the pandemic. I went through the entire music room and like pulled out everything, dumped out everything. I tested all the guitar cords to see if they worked, threw out a bunch of ones that didn't, went through all the microphones, tossed out old mics that were like dented or broken that I was just keeping for who knows why. Mic cords, making sure all of them work, plugging them in, taking them out, plugging them in, taking them out, you know, just like, you know, then I nicely rolled everything up, gave everything new little elastic Velcro bands. So they're all in nice little, you know, packets together.
So you're ready to gig again soon.
Yes. If anybody wants to gig, or asks me to gig or show up somewhere and play some music, I'm ready. I can just reach into my little, what do you call them? Like the, I have all those, very IKEA, the cloth drawers.
Oh, like you know, a flugen or, you know,
whatever it is. They
Schmiergen.
Slip right into like this, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Just the cloth drawer. I don't know what to call them. I'm sure that's what it is. I have a bunch of them in the back, all under like the table and stuff that are just filled with like equipment. So, yeah, same. Musician life. It was so easy to get into podcasting because I'm like, well, I've got tons of mics and shit. We can make it work.
Yeah. We have like stands and stuff.
Exactly.
And
we're ready.
It's so funny because like this is probably thrilling for the listener. So like, you know, when you watch videos of people recording their podcast, like, you know, John Lovett on you know, Crooked Media and all that stuff, you see that they're having like, they have like this really...
That's random. John, I know. Lovett.
Well, John...
Cannot wait to watch John Lovett.
Well, no, John Lovett, Ronan Farrow, not John Lovett, you know... The guy from SNL. You knew which John Lovett I was talking about, right?
I had no idea. I was immediately picturing fucking John Lovett, like old school. Like, is he alive? He might even be dead.
No, he's alive. John Lovett is the name of Ronan Farrow's partner, who has who's a podcaster. Yeah. He wrote for Obama. Yeah,
right. No, I kind of know your time. You're the one who keeps up on those professional gays. I can't do it. No, I totally was picturing John. I'm like, John Lovett? What?
John Anyways. Lovett and Ronan Farrow, yes.
Yeah.
So anyway, so like I was actually watching an interview that he was doing for his podcast, and he has like, you know, the like the super professional podcaster mic, but basically it's a mic for radio.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, that's all well and good and stuff, but like we're doing just fine. I mean, I think we're doing just fine with our like,
because right.
This is versatile.
It is.
You know, we stand versatility.
We do.
You know,
we do.
Fuck the binaries. Yeah. No tops, no bottoms. It's all about being verse on this podcast.
Yeah. Well, you have to, especially as things get back to normal. Like I'm looking forward to like packing up the Joe Mobile and, you know, heading up to LA to, you know, rebuild all of this in someone's kitchen.
Oh, I know. I know, right?
To interview. Like, I'm looking forward to getting back to that kind of life, you know? And when we travel, you know, packing up all of our little travel gear. And
I have like 6 or 7 different multicolored cords that are like 20 feet long.
Yeah.
So we can definitely socially distance. I mean, you know, if someone doesn't feel comfortable with us in their apartment, we can just run the cords and...
Yeah, we'll sit in the car and...
Yeah. We'll sit in the garage or, you know, they'll be upstairs, we'll be downstairs, we'll FaceTime each other.
So exciting. It's the world is, it's so flexible, you know, we can do whatever. Joe, how's your week been?
Oh, it's been good.
Good.
Yeah, celebrating the Jimmykins.
That's right, it was his birthday.
Yes.
And the Sam Squanch's birthday was week too. So
we're with Capricorns.
Cancers.
Oh, no, sorry, Cancers.
Yeah, I was going to say, Capricorn is like later, isn't it? Because I know it's near Sagittarius.
Yes, Capricorn is after Sagittarius.
Right. I know famously. They're near each other. Famously after whatever. Cancers. We're with Cancers.
Yes. Those emotional creatures.
Oh, yeah. Super emotional. Yeah. They both just sit on the couch and stare at each other. No, that's not true. Jimmykins is a delight. I love when he comes over. I am so looking for... Okay, so first of all, yes, it was the Sam Squanch's birthday. Now I'm taking this back to me. I know I asked you how you were doing, but who cares?
You are self-aware, and I will allow it because of that.
But it was the Sam Squanch's birthday, and so thank you for coming, first of all, to the boardy.
You're welcome. I bring it to you every ball.
You brought it this time, because you got us a great gift, and I say us, even though it was really for him.
Well,
but
you were
mentioned. Yeah, I was mentioned. But you got a Jackie Beat cameo, which was so sweet. So yeah, Jackie Beat, hit her up on Cameo. Make sure you use, like, the link... Oh shit! Like the link on her Instagram page.
It'll be on the thing. It'll be on the show notes.
Yeah, let me make sure I write that down to put the correct link, because there's something about like if you do it, if you buy the cameo through like Apple or something, they take 35% of the money. Like if you do it through the app or something, but if you go to the website and buy it like directly from the creator, they get the money. Like they still get a, you know, Cameo still gets a percentage, but it's not as big. It's like a double, because the app takes a piece and Cameo takes a piece.
Well, so I did it through the Cameo site, but like I did it on a computer. I didn't do it on the app on my phone.
Right. Yeah, I think that's the better way to do it. I should clarify, but Jackie, I watch a lot of her live stuff, and she always said, like, she's like, buy my Cameo, but not through the app. Go to the website.
Okay.
So,
well, that's good to know, because I did it officially through the, I searched her on the Cameo site on
I think that's the better way to go, because I think the app takes a big chunk. But anyways, not really the point. The point is that you got as a lovely cameo from Jackie Beat. Which one I thought was awesome, because I've seen other cameos. Usually they're like 30 seconds, 60 seconds, a minute, you know, well, 60 seconds is a minute, Joshua. Oh my gosh, math. Too much mathing lately. But anyways, usually they're like a minute, it seems. But hers was like 3 minutes, and she did everything. She was fucking funny. She hit all the points. She sang. I mean, I was just like, I was so delighted. So I was super excited, and I just have to thank you again.
Oh my god, I'll just buy cameos from Jackie Beat all the time.
Right, exactly. So it was very lovely. Lots of people are on there. You know, it's a great way to make money for people, especially
Robert Englund is on there.
Yeah, a lot of people are on there. I mean, it's a great way to make money, you know, just send, you know, because it used to be like back in the day, it's like, oh, record my, you know, like my outgoing message or my voicemail or something like that. Now it's like, just send my friend a, you know, a thing and scare them or yell at them or be mean to them. Like,
oh,
it's
my
so
God.
Lovely.
So James is going to hear this. Jimmykins is going to hear this. So, It'll be a surprise for him when he does. So I almost bought him a Cameo for his birthday, but I was like, man, like there's no, Dave Grohl's not on Cameo. No one on the Foo Fighters is on Cameo. You know, I was like, who am I going to get? And so I found, his name is Jason Bustamante and he is a professional bowler.
Oh.
And the thing about Jason Bustamante that's most notable is the fact that he is a two-handed bowler. So he actually, chucks the ball down the lane with both hands. Instead of the traditional way with, you know, one hand and the fingers and all that stuff.
Oh, is that not...
It's not illegal. It's just that that's his style and he has a lot of control on it. Yeah. And one of our early dates was we went to BJ's and professional bowling was on the screen. And so he was telling me all about it. And so I actually almost bought him a Cameo from Jason Bustamante for his birthday to tell him, like, you know... happy birthday and give him encouragement for bowling.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. I found something better. So,
oh,
I found something that he would appreciate more. So.
Well, very cool.
I like but it's that still on the table for the future, I guess.
Yeah, you can always have that there if he's on there. I mean, as things return, you know, to normal, quote unquote, whatever that means.
Or is it Jordan Bustamante? I don't remember.
I have no idea.
Okay. It's so, J. Bustamante, professional bowler. He's Australian. Yeah.
Bowling is like the ball that you throw at the little stick people at the end of the lane. I'm kidding. I know what bowling is.
You're from Ohio.
But they do look like people.
Well, yeah. I mean,
it seems like a very violent game, is what I'm saying. Like throwing balls, and it's just awful. No, I think that's very sweet. I'm sure he will enjoy whatever you got him, but you always have that in your back pocket, you know? But my point was, as things kind of return, you know, as people are able to go out and start making, you know, money again, doing what they usually do, Cameo may change. You know, people may leave it or whatnot. Because I just know a ton of people joined it to make money
during the pandemic
because they couldn't do anything else. So it's like, well, might as well use this time to say happy birthday to my fans.
And a lot of, like, higher profile folks, they get on there. They do like really random stints, but they always do it for charity. It's like, hey, everybody, I'm doing a Cameo and every proceed is going to go to the Trevor Project or, you know, something. So, and a lot of drag queens are on Cameo.
Oh, yeah, tons of drag queens.
But you were saying that you've seen cameos with drag queens where they're not in drag?
I have heard a lot of criticism from drag queens like Jackie Beed. She specifically... You know, she will read a girl. So she's like, you know, or they'll like just put on like sunglasses or something and maybe throw on a wig, but they're not like fully made up. And she just thinks that's kind of insulting. Like, you know, if people go on there, because the drag race queens can charge a lot. Like I know Jackie does not charge that much, relatively speaking. You know, some people charge hundreds of dollars, you know, for a Cameo. And some of the drag race girls, I think, do. They charge quite a bit. And then they don't get into drag. It's just like them as a boy, like, hey, happy birthday. It's like, nobody wants to see that. That's not what people paid for, you know? Not really.
Yeah.
But, so that's been, like, her critique. And, I mean, I have seen in the comments, like, other people complaining and calling out, you know, certain queens. Like, oh, yeah, you know, blah, blah does that. You know, or they just throw on glasses or something that kind of zhuzh themselves up. But it's obvious that they're not in, like, full beat. And so that's kind of Jackie's thing where she will get into full drag. She'll get into full drag just to do cameos, but a lot of times if she's out and about doing other things, she'll put out a thing like, I'm filming today, so if you're like putting it off or blah, blah, like I'm in full drag today, I can do cameos.
Yeah.
You know, I've got an hour or two or whatever, you know, and I'll do a bunch of cameos and so people will buy them.
Joshua, do you think we could get on Cameo? We'll just be like two nobodies on Cameo.
I don't even know what the parameters are. Like, I don't know too much about it. You know, I've seen and heard of people doing it. This was the first, nobody's ever bought us one, you know, so this is the first time.
Yay.
Yeah, so it's super
sweet. I know,
sweet
and it was like,
and
I knew,
perfect.
I knew we were getting ready to do cake. So I was like, we're probably not going to sing. So I was like, okay, let's just put it on the Bluetooth so everyone can hear it. And then you guys can, you know, take a look at it. And she was in her full, she finished it on July 4th. Yeah. So she's in full patriotic garb.
I know, so funny. And I love how she just was like, fuck the USA. But, you know, it's still okay. Like, yeah. You know, it's so funny.
It's getting better.
But yeah, I mean, I've been hearing a lot because, like, Jeffrey listens to Howard Stern quite a bit. And he's actually been in, like, some sort of, like, protracted argument with, like, one of the WACPAC, who is like, I'm making all this money on Cameo. Like, I don't need you, Howard Stern, you know? And Howard's like, well, you wouldn't have, like, money. You know what I mean? Like, nobody would go to your Cameo if you weren't on my show. To which I'm like, yeah, that's fair. But also, without, like, the Whack Pack, like, who is Howard Stern as well? You know what I mean? Like, it does kind of work. Like, a lot of people are fans of these people and listen to his show for these bizarre characters that he's collected over the years that are part of the show. I don't know how much you know about Howard Stern.
No, yeah. Don't know much.
Well, anyway, I don't know what the parameter is. Like, do you have to be like, hey, look, I've got 100,000 followers on Twitter, so I deserve Cameo. Like, I have no idea what they're... You know.
I'm going to look into it.
Yeah.
I think we would make some cool cameos.
Yeah. We could try. I'm for if somebody wants to pay me some money to be like, hey, it's me.
I want to do so like they have different occasions for Cameo.
Yeah.
It's like birthday, encouragement. Mm-hmm. My favorite is like insult or roast. And I was like, huh, I wonder if we could get someone who is like a quote-unquote paragon of goodness, and then choose to have them roast someone. So, like, you know, we'll get Martha Stewart to say that, you know, hi, Joshua, I'm Martha Stewart, and your friend Joe paid me to say that your makeup is terrible. Or, like, you know, your cooking sucks, or something like that.
I don't know. Maybe. Joe, if you want to look into that, you go right ahead. Yeah. I mean, if people, I'm for making money however we can so that we can keep Fright School in fresh microphone cords.
Yes.
Anyways, my point being that I was delighted by the cameo. And the reason I brought it up was because we're going to take Jimmy. Will this be his first like drag show?
I mean, like, this is, should we even count this as a drag show? Because Jackie Beat is unto herself and her own thing, you know?
No, but she is a drag queen.
Yeah.
Like, but, I mean, it is a drag show in the sense of, like, you know, she's in drag, she's very, you know, but...
So then, yeah, I mean, overall, no matter what, yes, it
is
his first...
Yeah, he's never been to a drag show.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited that the first person he's going to see is Jackie Beat. And I have to say that I'm thankful that, like, I hope that... during his time with me and around me, that he's allowed his skin to thicken, because I think Jackie Beat is going to like rip him a new one. It's going to be delightful. I'm going to put him right on the aisle so that when she comes by, she'll see him, because we're the front table. I bought like the closest.
I know you did.
I bought fucking VIP table right at the front. We're going to put him on the inner side. That way when she comes and does her audience work, she's going to see that precious little baby face and she's going to be like, I'm going to hurt this one's feelings. It's going to be fun.
I mean, I would... see, now that you've said all that, he's going to find some reason to not go.
Oh, like, she's really not like that.
If
like,
anything, she's going to severely hit on him or something.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he's an adorable little thing. And I just think she's going to be like, oh, honey, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
Who are these, horrible men that have, like, kidnapped you and brought you to my show? But I'm kind of looking forward to that. He's going to get a nice dose of queer culture.
I know.
Very specific.
I remember my first Jackie Beat show, which was with you also. And I was like, damn, it was so much fun. I love it. Okay. Well, I can't wait. We'll give a full report in the future.
It's only in a couple of weeks, which was the other nice thing about doing that. Okay. So to, the horror stuff. So I totally forgot to mention last week that I watched this movie called Vicious Fun on Shudder. That I thought was really a good time. And I wanted to, alert our little listeners, you know, dear listener.
Mm.
I guess it came out last year. Cody Callahan on direction. I don't know. Oh, there we go. I don't know too much about it, but I did really enjoy, like, I don't know, like, the kind of where it came from or, like, you know, how it ended up on Shudder or whatnot. I don't know what her journey has been.
Okay.
But it was about this guy, Joel, who's like a horror journalist. Kind of, it's like he works for like a Fangoria type magazine.
Okay.
I think it's called like Vicious Fanatics or something.
Okay.
Anyway, so it's like he's like, lives with this girl who's his roommate, and mm-hmm. he's like in love with her, of course. And
of
so
course.
She's seeing this dude who he's like jealous of or whatever. And he decides to like follow the guy to this like bar where he proceeds to get really drunk and he like passes out in a closet. And when he wakes up, he finds the guy, like all these people together, and he's like sits among them and hangs out and whatnot, and they're all talking. And it turns out it's like a support group for serial killers. And he's just kind of like, oh yeah, I'm a serial killer. And it was really fun. Like, I just thought it was, the soundtrack was really great. The music was great. It was this like neon 80s vibe a lot. Yeah, so I just wanted to throw that out there. Check it out. You should watch it sometimes because it was, I mean, it was gory and bloody and weird, but it was fun. Like, it was like a comedy, you know? It was a horror comedy. And I totally forgot. Okay. I watched it like 2 weeks ago and totally forgot to tell you about it. So, my bad. What have you been watching?
Well, I went to the movies and I watched Zola. Did I talk about this last time?
I think we did talk a little bit about it because I haven't seen it.
Yeah, so watch Zola. That's how far. That's how long I haven't seen you. So definitely recommend everybody watch that. I am caught up on Loki finally on which I think you would like. It's a lot of fun. Yeah. It's also an interesting take on just like, you know, the idea of superheroes and stuff, but it's very interesting to see how like these shows that are on Disney Plus, all the Marvel shows, they are totally setting up what the rest of the Marvel world is going to be in a very awesome way.
Okay.
With regards to like the multiverse and the potential arrival of mutants and the X-Men to the Marvel universe and all of that. So I think that it's very interesting. Like now that we have, now that like we're living in the post-Endgame Marvel, like we're seeing all of these cool things. I'm sorry, I just noticed that you have Baby Yoda with a sombrero behind you.
You haven't noticed? He's been there for like a year like that, or well, not a full year. But
with a sombrero, I haven't noticed. I've noticed Baby Yoda behind you, but I didn't notice that he had a sombrero on him.
Yeah, well, I guess the sombrero happened in January.
Oh, okay.
When I quit, when I left my job, because that was given to me as a gift. It was on, I think it was on a bottle of tequila.
Mm.
And I thought it was cute, and I popped it on his head because it fit. He looks cute.
He does look cute.
He's ready to party.
We'll post it.
They've probably seen it in pictures or whatnot. I don't know. Guess we haven't done any live videos lately. We should.
We should do a live, you know, soon.
We should do something soon.
We'll go live on Cameo, everybody. So
oh, Joe, stop trying to make Cameo happen.
I'm sorry. People also charge if you want to get like a text message from them.
No, it's true.
And I'm like, how do we even know that that's you? Like,
this is a serious academic show, Joe. We're not here for the quick cash in. Buy our t-shirts.
Buy our
link
t-shirts
below.
Yes. I did get a. It's the end of an era. Because I bought a new laptop. It was time to upgrade. And the laptop that I had previously saw like the birth of all my podcasts.
Yeah.
And was one that I've taken and traveled the nation with. So end of an era for sure, but we are broadcasting live from the new hotness. And I always told myself that when I get a new laptop, I was gonna get like one of those removable hard covers and get a clear one and then put a bunch of stickers on it. So I am now combing through my archive of stickers that I've been saving for a new laptop to put on. So you know that there's going to be like a Fright School sticker with prominence here. Like stuff. I actually ordered, I went ahead and ordered a Studio House sticker that says Watch More Horror. Like,
oh,
to
fun.
Put on the front. So
yeah.
So yeah, so I want to be okay and personalize my stuff.
I like it. I think that's fun. That sounds like a good time.
Yeah.
And you'll be out places and people will be like, "Oh my gosh, look at all that horror stuff."
Yeah.
Stay away from that guy,
yes.
Children.
Or hey, let's go over there.
Right.
He looks like he knows some good things.
I know, I was so mad. So this is so bizarre. Why am I sharing this story? I don't know. Maybe horror fans will understand, but Jeffrey and I were in the in the grocer, you know.
in the grocery.
And we were standing in line behind this guy, and he was like tattooed up and down. And with a lot of horror stuff, you know? So I was like trying to engage him.
Oh, was it Brian or Scott? Are they visiting? Oh,
that would have been awesome.
Oh, that would have been awesome. That would have been great. Miss you guys. Love you guys.
Yeah, but it wasn't. It was neither of them. But I guess he's just either, he's just covered in tattoos, and if somebody comments on him, he's just like, fuck off, you know, because he did not, like, respond. Because I was like, we were standing behind him, and so, like, loudly enough, because I was hoping, I didn't want to be like, hey, but I also kind of wanted to figure out how, you know, to engage him, you know, but of his own, you know, of his own will, if he wanted to, you know. Mm-hmm. So we were talking. I was like, oh my gosh, his tattoos are awesome. Like, look. And he had like Lydia on his calf, but it was like the Beetlejuice cartoon version of Lydia.
Yes.
With like the red spider web, you know, thing. And it's like he kind of turned, but then he turned back around. He's like, no, I'm not dealing with you people. So.
But like, if you have a tattoo tattoos that are visible when you're clothed normally, not, you know, not when you're in the boudoir,
right?
Or in your case, the abattoir,
right?
look it up. look it up. We won't tell you what it is.
Appropriate for today's discussion.
So when you have those tattoos, you obviously, like, you know, comments may or may not happen. Like, they're within full view of a pub. This is where you get into the quote unquote academic conversation about, you know, public space. And it's like, okay, well, if your body and you have artwork on your body that is within my field of visuality, then I am going to comment on it. Even though generally, you know, I don't like commenting on people's bodies. But in this instance, it was made for, you know, there's an idea that it was also made for public consumption as well as personal.
Yeah, and maybe,
you know, personal reasons.
And again, maybe if I'd been some like hot girl, he would have been like, oh yeah, you know, and he would have talked, or a hot guy that he was interested in, or a hot whoever.
A hot person, yes.
Again, I mean, I don't want to say like just because you have tattoos and you're in public, people have like the right to comment. But it's more just about like, you know, if your laptop's covered in horror and I saw you in like Starbucks, I probably would stop and be like, oh, that's cool. I love that movie, you know, and we could talk and now we're horror friends.
When I got my haircut at my barber's, she was there by herself. And then one of the other barbers came in towards the end and I was wearing my Get Out t-shirt from Studio House.
Oh, yeah.
And he was like, oh, is that a Studio House design? I was like, yeah, I talk to that guy all the time. And I was going to be like, oh yeah, I'm like met him at a con once. He was really cool. So that's the thing, is that like, you know, there, sometimes we are purposely doing that in order to flag certain things. I mean, we know this as queer people, like that's a very queer thing to do, is to, you know, present and peacock, if you will.
Peacock.
Into peacock.
Yeah, he was also wearing a Murder by Death t-shirt, which I think is a band. So it was just like everything he had going on was very like horror, rock and roll kind of thing. So I was just like, oh my gosh, we would probably love to hang out with this guy. Especially like the tattoo was so specific. Like, why the cartoon version of Lydia Dietz from the Beetlejuice show? Like, why that? You know, so it's like I would have talked to him. But again, he was buying, you know, his
kombucha.
He didn't want to be bothered. Actually, yeah, he had a lot of like, it was weird. It was like a weird mix of like, we sound like stalkers, but we're all like standing behind him as he's unloading. So it's like, it was like this weird mix of like health food and like junk food. So I'm like, what is happening?
It was like
here?
Kombucha and like Doritos.
And Doritos. Yeah, exactly. Like ho-hos and, you know, quinoa. I'm like, well, whatever.
It takes all kinds.
Anyways, what was the point of all that? Oh, the stickers. Yes. Yes. So, oh, shit, they're stickers.
If you have stickers that you want to give me, I'll also take them now, too. Yeah. So
I probably have a bunch of stickers. I mean, well, I sent a nice chunk of, like, stuff from Knee High Horror to my niece.
Oh.
She did some where it's like she wrote me a letter, so I wrote her back a letter, and then I sent her a bunch of, like, creepy stickers and stuff.
How Victorian.
Yes, horror things. You know how you do those kinds
of
things.
Uncle.
Right. Dearest uncle. anyways. Yeah. Oh, Joe. Oh. I'm happy for your new computer, your new setup, all of those things.
It's good in service of you, Joshua.
You know, wow, you're like Steve Jobs. You're a computer
perfect.
Technician.
You're beautiful. You look like Linda Evangelista. You're a model. No, but it's all in service of us, Joshua.
Exactly. Well, I love a good servicing. So with that, we're going to take a quick little break and be back to discuss the Texas Chainsaw Massacre of 2003.
Hey, everybody. I'm Chris Fafalius, and I'm the producer of Krista Makes a Podcast and the host of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
And I'm Matt Kelly, host of Horror Movie Night and the producer slash the head of content for the Geekscape Podcasting Network.
Between the two of us, we have, believe it or not, 25 years of podcasting experience, and we want to help you start your own podcast.
We know podcasting, and we want to share that knowledge with you.
So whether you're new to podcasting or you want some feedback on your currently active podcast, we want to help.
Or perhaps you're just overwhelmed with all of the editing work. Well, we can help you with that also.
You can check out our website at weknowpodcasting.com for more information.
We're excited to help your podcasting dreams become a reality.
All right, welcome back. So today, as I said, we've been doing our, you know, kind of summer horror, road trip horror, vacation horror, whatever you want to call it. It's July. And so we've been looking at, you know, lots of movies in that realm. So today I thought it would be fun. Because we did The Hills Have Eyes and we did Friday the 13th, which both owe quite a bit of their plot lines and, you know, stuff, their production, to the original 1974 Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So I thought it would be fun today to take a look at the remake and, you know, look back on one of our very first episodes. I think episode 4 or 5, somewhere around there, was the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Mm-hmm. So, you know, way throwing it back. But I thought it'd be fun to do this one today. So we got, it's 2003. 2003. The times.
I know.
I was 18. Seriously.
I was 14.
Oh, look at you.
Was I 14? Yes, I was 14.
I am 16. No, let's not start that or we'll be in trouble. Yeah, so directed by Marcus Nispel or Nispel. I've never bothered to find out exactly how
it's Nepal, actually.
Nepal, is it?
No, it's not.
We got a screenplay by Scott Cusar, produced by Michael Bay. Of course.
Yes.
What in the early 2000s wasn't made, you know, or produced by him? Kind of cool, though, because Toby Hooper and the writer Kim Henkel served as co-producers. So from the original, along with Daniel Pearl, he was the cinematographer on the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And he came back to do the cinematography for the remake. Again, thought that was kind of cool. Along with John Larroquette. Reprising the narration for the, like, the beginning and the end, you know, opening scene. So let's see, when did this open? October 17, 2003. So yeah, just a couple months before I would have turned 19. And I did go to see this in the theater. I remember it well. No, I don't. I was high. But I do remember going to, I mean, we did see it in the theater, which I went to see this movie hostily, you know? I was just like, how bloody dare they, you know, think that they can remake the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you know? Especially this time, I was so in love with the original 70s movie, I had discovered it. I mean, I'd seen it as a kid and then had renewed interest. It was one of the first, like, this DVD that I have, actually, of it, is one of the first, like, DVDs I owned. I think it's like the 35th anniversary version or the 40th anniversary, one of those. Anyways, it was like a really cool packaging and all this kind of stuff, one of the earliest things. And I would show it to everybody. Like, if you came to my house, you were watching the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Like, that was just what we were doing. And then we were going to get high and watch something stupid. But first, watching the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So I was a big fan. Loved the movie. So when they were going to do the remake, I was just like, fuck all of these people. Let's go.
You're a little hipster asshole.
I know. I was like, we're going to go see this movie and it's going to be terrible. And then I ended up enjoying it, but we'll get into that as we go. But that's just kind of, that's where I was at when this came out. It did, you know, bomb. It, $107.4 million. It was a big financial hit. Kind of kicked off Platinum Dune. I mean, I think this was the first movie. Yeah, this is their first Platinum Dunes. This is the first film they produced. was the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and it kicked off like a whole. I mean, we had been seeing like the Japanese horror remakes that were coming out before, but like this really, I think, kicked off like all of those. So Platinum Dunes made the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake. They did the Amityville Horror remake. They did the Hitcher remake. They did the Friday the 13th remake, A Nightmare on Elm Street. They rebooted the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I mean, this was just kind of their thing, you know, was remaking
classics.
Yeah, but they also did all like the Purge films.
Oh, interesting.
The Ouija films, the A Quiet Place, those are by Platinum Dunes as well. You know, so this just kind of kicked off that whole time frame of like all of a sudden everything was getting a remake. I was trying to see what others besides. Oh, Halloween, that came out. That was not them, but that came out.
The Rob Zombie Halloween?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Prom Night, the first Black Christmas that came out in 2006, or the first remake in 2006, When a Stranger Calls got remade, House of Wax got remade.
Did they also do the Last House on the Left remake?
It's not on this list.
Okay.
Of films that Platinum Dunes produced.
Okay.
And I mean, then it has different distributors, like New Line distributed the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, MGM did Amityville, Lionsgate did some of them, Warner Brothers, Universal, mm-hmm. You know, they're all over the place, but they were the production companies behind it. But yeah, just this whole time, oh, the Dawn of the Dead remake, The Omen was remade, The Hills Have Eyes, the 2006 got remade.
This is all by them.
No. I'm just saying.
Oh, but in that time frame,
after the Texas Chainsaw Massacre reboot happened, and then it did so well, it was like, I mean, financially at least, lots of critical dissent. You know, do you remember a couple of years? Well, I don't know how long, maybe a year or two ago, that Horror Movie Night did the remakes thing. You know, where they were breaking it down. This was like, I think, very divisive. Like, I jumped in and kind of, you know, talked mm-hmm. a little bit about it and why I like it. But it was very, you know, divisive all around. Critics all over the place. People really hated it or they really liked it. But regardless, it made over $100 million on a $10 million budget. Hugely successful. So everybody was like, okay, let's remake everything. You know, so I at least in my opinion, that's kind of like when you look at that time period, every time you turn around, every mm-hmm. new movie was a remake of something. So this kind of like really, I think this set that all in motion by doing so well. Mm-hmm. Like it was like a sleeper hit, you know? Mm-hmm. I think people, I mean, I don't know. I don't know how many people went to it to hate watch it and ended up leaving and hating it or liking it. Like me, like I did leave going, wow, I really like that, you know? So I don't know what the story is, and you know, I'm sure people will have their feelings, but
yeah,
again, we're here to talk about, you know, why does it exist? Let's start with well, I guess not start with, since I already talked for a half hour just now. Joe, what did you think about seeing this? And then we could kind of compare and contrast the original.
Oh my God, Joshua. I think to use the parlance of Generation Z, this movie got me fucked up.
Yeah.
But it was like, but also like, I'm trying to be measured about my response, right? Because like, I enjoyed it, but did I enjoy it because I'm sitting on your couch across from you yelling at the screen? Like it's Rocky Horror. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Did I enjoy it because of that? Because I feel like if this was me at home watching it in like last year during pandemic times, I probably would have been on my phone the entire time. Like, and the lights would be on, and you know,
you'd been on your phone because you were so bored by it, or you'd been on your phone to avoid
it would have like been the gore. Yeah, to avoid like the gore, because it was very bloody. This is like you mentioned to me. It's like when we watch the remake, it's going to be what you thought the original should have been. Right. And that's exactly what I got with this. Also, I feel like House of a Thousand Corpses prepared me for this, which was really interesting to have that, you know, it wasn't as severe or as gross as House of a Thousand Corpses by any means.
Oh, okay.
But
yeah.
It did prepare me to like accept all of the violence that was coming.
Yeah.
But I mean, otherwise, I enjoyed it. I think this is definitely one of those films that you show at like a slumber party. You show it in a group to have those kinds of, you know, don't go in there conversations.
Right, right. No, that makes sense. Yeah, yeah. I think this, yeah, definitely kind of perfect for that. I remember buying it on DVD, and then again, it became sort of like the original, like where it's like, oh, have you seen the new Texas Chainsaw Massacre? Let's watch it. Because at that point, you know, 2003, you know, Saw was still around the corner, I think, right? 2004.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that kind of gore was still, at least to me, like, I mean, horror films certainly have always had gore, you know, and been violent, and, you know, I've seen lots of blood and stuff. But, you know, when you look back on things that you watched in the 80s and the 90s or the movies made then, there is, you know, some of it's like, clearly this is like fake, you know, clearly this is... This film was just so vicious. It would, like the gore in it, the pain in it, the torture in it, it's so tactile and so it feels real, you know. Now again, I can't speak for like, you know, how long people can survive on a hook with their leg chopped off. I mean, I don't know. It's a horror film, you know. But it's gritty, you know, and you feel it. You know, you just you're really there.
So, I mean, as good as our good, you know, Dean's List students of Fright School know, right? So this, we place this within its historical context of the post 9/11, the Iraq War. Saw is around this time where we talk about torture porn and all of that stuff. Like that's very much
we're starting to gear up into that.
Exactly, we're starting to gear up into that, and it's interesting because, like, you know, the new millennium, like the late 90s, and then films right around the 2000, 2001, pre 9/11 are all like there's still an element of camp to it,
yeah.
As opposed to this, which is like it's unyielding and cruel,
yeah, definitely
in a way that like in very beautiful ways in some regards, but like it's such a shift from what we saw in the late 90s and the 2000 pre 9/11.
Yeah, I was trying to remember today when, because obviously when 9/11 happened, and then as we got, you know, the Iraq War, as that started to build up, and like the critique, you know, the criticism of it, you know, I was thinking about like the Dixie Chicks, because was that in 2001 when they went and said like their whole thing, like, you know,
I don't think it was 2001.
Yeah,
I think
I was
it was
no, it had to be later, right?
It was later. It was probably, to be honest with you, it was
actually,
probably
it might have been 2003 too.
It was probably the aughts.
No, yeah, it was March 10, 2003.
Yeah.
So just a few months before this came out, well, or whatever, that is 6 months, 7 months, whatever, I don't know. Yeah. Again, I'm not...
Then the Dixie Chicks were all like, you know, we're ashamed of Bush being from Texas.
Right, but that's kind of like, when this film came out, that mounting, like, criticism against, like, the war and against what was being said was, like, sort of growing. So there's such, like, this, like... There's this real cynicism to the movies of like that time period of 2003, 4, 5, 6. I mean, Hostel, which we have not yet done for this show. Maybe we will eventually. I actually do think there's an interesting conversation there about, you know, xenophobia, if nothing else. You know, but the movies that came out, like Saw, the torture porn, as we've discussed in the past on the show, like this ultraviolence, this cruelty. It also speaks to like a real cynicism, you know, of just like this is, I mean, this film takes like small town America, much like the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and makes it this like really dangerous, scary place. And we see that a lot. I mean, obviously the coastal elites, you know, that's kind of that attitude that gets like, oh no, I'm not going to go to some backwater, you know, town and be murdered or eaten, because, you know, it's like such a pervasive sort of stereotype.
But it comes from this. It comes from...
Yeah, it comes out of these sorts of of films. And again, you know, when you look at, you know, just like... The people who vote or the people who engage in politics sometimes have the voice, you know? So if like people are like, oh, that state is filled with a bunch of like, you know, people who voted for Trump and loved Trump. Well, maybe that's not the truth. Maybe it's, you know, the people that were engaged or the people who could vote. That's a whole other thing.
Yeah.
It's not even really necessarily about, you know, like the South. People are always like, oh, fuck the South. And it's like the South is full of, you know,
there's a lot of
diverse people like and black people that, you know, are disenfranchised, you know, from like voting and should, you know, could have more of a voice. But like white elitism, you know, liberalism is just like, just let the South go, you know. And it's like, no, there's people that need saving, you know. Not everybody can afford to leave places. Not everybody has like the, you know. So anyways, there's just like, there's just a real point is just a real cynicism to this film that I think going into a war, having, you know, this attack happen, and then, you know, in the couple of years after it, you know, this growing division and cynicism, and then this comes out and it's just so unrelenting and so bloody and violent, unlike, you know, things that we had seen before. I mean, again, there are examples. I mean, I'm just saying, generally speaking, like, I think before this, you know, I went to the theater to see like Jason X, which was like goofy as shit, you know, or like The Ring, which was creepy. You know, that was 2001 or two, somewhere around there.
Chucky, Bride of Chucky. When's Bride of Chucky?
That was 98.
Yeah. So, but it's still
goofy. Yeah.
There's an element of camp to it.
Yeah, and Bride of Chucky, I think, goes back more towards what Scream did. You know, because Scream had, you know, allowed this like meta conversation to develop. More pointedly in a mainstream film.
But there's there's
campiness.
There's campiness, there's a humor in it, and you know, and it's meta, but like because it's meta, there's an element of camp that's attached to that, right? So but with this, it's just like, I mean, like it reminds me in some regards of Midsommar, where it's like just hard. It's just a hard watch.
Right. Yeah.
For some people. I mean, you know, I think I'm fairly desensitized to a lot of stuff. I mean, I was definitely squirming, but like in the way that's like, you know, partially, yes, I'm just uncomfortable, but also like, you know, performative because like, you know, people's legs are getting chopped off and face is getting ripped off. I feel like there should be more of a response to that. I mean, I think you'd worry about me, right? If I just sat there and like, you know, sedate and didn't react to anything.
Well, like me laughing at so much of it. Cause I mean,
well, no, we did. So, well, we did
true.
Laugh.
We did. Yeah. Cause I mean, there's just some, especially now, like I remember watching it. I laughed a lot. Like, no,
but we're so fucked already. So.
Right. Exactly. But I mean, there is also just like, cause the sheriff just, he says some like, you know, that scene where he's just like, I got as much respect for the dead as anybody in this town. And then he's like, get that filthy thing out of the backseat of my car. It's just like, you know, or his whole thing, I smell bullshit. It's just like,
what do you say? It's not, like, can you get the fuck out of my way? Or
yes, and I admit to stealing that line. I probably even said it to Jimmy Kins actually, because I've definitely used it on like people before. Just, you know, like, you mind getting the fuck out of my way, son? Because it's just so good. It's just so fucking bonkers. Like, he's supposed to be the sheriff of this town helping the, you know, this girl in the back. I mean, the whole thing. Again, it's a period piece. It's set in the 70s. Yeah. I don't know. You know, maybe they didn't yet. It's a bunch of white kids. So they're not like, oh, something's fucking wrong with the police here. Maybe we should get the hell out.
But it's interesting, right? Because like there are a bunch of fucking white kids and they're in Texas. But like he looks at their IDs and all he sees are like Yankee trash. Right.
Right.
He sees not from here.
Right.
And that's what separates them. And immediately it's like, oh, you're better than me type thing. The sheriff, you know, obviously very disturbing. Love that actor. They gave him a lot to do. But when he takes the gun, sniffs it, and I was like, because he knows exactly where she put it.
Right. Like, that's Arlie Ermey, who we know. He's very famous. Like, it was kind of a big deal that he did this movie, I think, because he had been, you know, this sort of...
He was a former Marine. Like, he was...
Right, yeah, but he was, like, in Full Metal Jacket. He had been doing, like, I think, kind of, like, very serious sort of, like...
He did Mail Call on the History Channel.
Oh, wow. See, I didn't even know that. But I just feel like he's kind of one of those guys that, like, when you see him in this role, it was kind of like seeing John Lithgow do the Dexter series, because I grew up with, I've talked about this on the show before, like Lithgow as this goofy fucking alien. And then he's playing this like really creepy, really fucking disturbing serial killer. It was like such a weird twist.
Yeah.
Although, actually, I don't know. Arlie Ermey is kind of creepy. But it was just such this, like, I remember watching it with a friend of mine who really liked Full Metal Jacket and really had, like, oh, I love Arlie Ermey. I feel like that name isn't right. Like, Arlie Ermey. Like, it doesn't sound right, but that's what it says. So it just sounds weird. And I remember watching it with him, and he was just like, what the fuck is he doing in this movie? Like, did he need a paycheck that bad? It's like, well, hopefully he signed up for some, like, after, you know, the points on the other end or whatever they say, you know, profit margin. But yeah, that he's just so gross. And you just want to be like, how can you children... Well, I mean, there you go. Fucking stoned hippies going to a Lynyrd Skynyrd concert. But it's like, this dude, it's obviously something is wrong. Like, just get out of here. Just take that girl's body.
The moment he put the gun, the revolver right. in his holster on his ankle, right. like, they should have known. It fits perfectly. That I'm like...
right. Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. To quote Bailey Sarian, seems suspicious. Like, yeah, really fucking suspicious, y'all. Get out of there. But yeah. Again, you know, they're
high and they're trusting.
If they would have left, then the movie would have been over. And yeah. What fun would that have been? Yeah. The guy wouldn't have even gotten his leg cut off.
If there were black or people of color in this movie, there would be no question that they would have, like, left.
Right. We have to leave yeah. right now. We haven't even talked too much about who's in this movie. It is a remake, but it's a reimagining, you know, kind of thing. Because they change all the names. None of the people have, like, the names. Mm-hmm. Even the family's name is Hewitt instead of Sawyer. Although I'm not sure. Is that from the original? Or is that something that came after? I'm not sure. Grandpa Sawyer. Yeah, I think they did have last names in the original movie. Sometimes things happen, sort of like Jason getting his mask in the third film, you know? It's like, wait, when did that happen? When were they named? Regardless, they have a different name. Their last name, Hewitt. And then there's kind of cognates for each character in the original film, but they have different names. The hitchhiker, obviously, they don't pick up, you know, the brother or whatever of Leatherface. They pick up this poor, you know, woman who's been brutalized by this family and I guess had her baby stolen. There's not clear, you know, too much clarity in exactly what's happened to this young woman, but you know, something bad, because you know, she shoots herself in the head, like, obviously,
yeah, with her, like,
she's not feeling
gun.
Real yeah. hopeful about yeah. the experience. She's just right, her vagina gun. Which again, I remember seeing that in the theater when it does that shot through the van,
yeah.
like, with all their faces and then through the hole in her head. I was just like, I think I love this movie. I think that I'm perfectly fine. Like, they weren't really trying to remake it. I mean, it is. You know, based on, like, I feel like that should be. It's like Texas Chainsaw Massacre based on...
Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Texas Chainsaw
like,
Massacre.
Right, you know. So it's just like, it feels like kind of a very different story in a lot of ways. There are quite a few changes, and not to mention, like, the gore and all that. But anyways, the point is, it is a veritable Who's That of the 2000s. We got Jessica Biel. What mm-hmm. is she doing? Anything? Where is she?
She's the wife and mother to Justin Timberlake's children.
Okay. See, this is why I'm glad we do this show, because you pay attention to this stuff.
Yeah.
We got Jonathan Tucker's Morgan, who... Jessica Biel's Aaron character is sort of the cognate to Sally Hardesty, mm-hmm. the Marilyn Burns role in the original, who I didn't show you. I should. Maybe we'll go back sometime and rewatch, but the other disc of my Texas Chainsaw Massacre DVD, there's a deleted scene where they actually had Marilyn come and record or film like a part in it, like a cameo that she's
nice.
You know, yeah, it was very sometime maybe we can look at it. We got Erica Learson as Pepper, who's like, I think her name was Pam. She was in Blair Witch 2 as like the witch, the redhead Wiccan, I should say. Mm-hmm. Eric Balfour, I keep saying that wrong.
Balfour. Yeah.
Eric Balfour as Kemper, who, what's his name in the Jerry. That's kind of, that's who I think he's supposed to be, is Jerry.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to think who had the guy driving. Doesn't, you know, mm-hmm. it doesn't really matter. Who I knew him from, or sometime around this same time, 6 Feet Under.
Oh, he's in 6 Feet Under. Okay.
Yeah.
He's been a lot. That was the height of his power. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, when was the last time he did anything? Oh, well, he's got quite an, he's got things he's been doing. I just haven't seen any of it. So You know, sorry.
That'll be our new thing. He's got things he's been doing.
Yeah. Sorry, Eric. I'm not watching, you know, CBS.
Yeah.
That's the problem. who else? Oh, Mike Vogel is Andy. And so, yeah. And then Andrew, I think it's Brynarski. B-R-Y-N-I-A-R-S-K-I.
Mm-hmm.
Brynarski, whatever.
The little boy?
Matter. No, that he plays Leatherface. You're thinking of David Dorfman as Jedediah. He was in The Ring.
Yes.
He's a little boy in The Ring.
Trinity K. Bonet's teeth. And...
Oh, my gosh, Joe. We are so canceled now. Oh, man.
He's got flippers on.
he's creepy, that little boy. But
when he said his name was Jedediah, like, you know... That was camp.
I'd have been like, hell no, I need to leave. We cannot be around anybody. It's like Children of the Corn, you know, Mordecai or Malachi and, you know, fucking anybody with those sorts of biblical names like that are like got a Kai in them or a Daya. You got to get out. You got to run. And I'm saying that as a Joshua, run.
Got a Kai or a Daya. Yeah. Run. You better run.
You got to.
Oh, man. Yeah, seeing all of them in the van on like in the beginning before, you know, their whole rest of their lives
before
the hilarity ensues. I told Joshua, I was like, wow, I feel like Joe of that time period, like, you know, early 2000s, budding homosexual Joe, like, you know, had a private sexual experience to each of the several movies or TV shows that each of those men were in.
Each of those men were in. Yeah.
Yeah.
At the time, I didn't really know. I knew who Jessica Biel was.
Yeah.
And I knew the redheaded woman,
mm-hmm,
you know,
from
because
Blair.
Again, I said that I Eric Balfour was in 6 Feet Under in 2001. Or so. I think he was in the second season, something around there. But that was like 2000, 2001. So it was before this. I didn't watch 6 Feet Under till years after. So I should, you know, just to fact check myself, I was not watching it at the time. That's just the only thing that I for sure know him from. When I see him, I'm like, oh, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre dude. Or, oh, the foot guy from 6 Feet Under.
Yeah, no,
that's what I think of.
I have like very specific memories of watching you know, IFC or whatever and seeing one of those guys in a movie on IFC where they're, you know, shirtless or,
right,
you know, a butt. Like it was like watching like Teenage Joe's Spank Bank, like on.
All be mercilessly
slaughtered.
Mercilessly. Got to say that one slow. Mercilessly.
See, that's the title of this episode is Teenage Joe Spank Bank.
Right. Yes. Spank Bank of Murder.
Yeah.
Oh, terrible. So I went back
Kai or a Daya.
Yeah, you got to run. I see. That's the pull quote that we need for those videos that we keep talking about. We're gonna make. So I went back to the comments. So this was from. It was June 5th, 2020. So yeah, almost a year ago, when Horror Movie Night was doing their best of remakes or something. And yeah, I'd written because Texas Chainsaw Massacre was not doing real strongly in during the competition. That they were having, or like the, you know, the voting, because people were voting, I think, the worst out, you know. So I really thought the Texas Chainsaw Massacre would have been better. Like, I thought it was held in a higher esteem, but yeah. I'm, as usual, I am pretty out of touch, I think, with mainstream horror, it seems. Because, like, I liked the Nightmare on Elm Street remake, you know. I didn't like it more than the original, of course, but it was fine. It was serviceable. Like, I enjoy it. You know, and the same with like Halloween. I love Rob Zombie's Halloween film. Well, both actually. I like part two as well. It's freaking weird with the white horse and other nonsense, but I'm fine with it. But I was looking because my comment. Yeah, so I said I went to see it out of spite because I was offended that they were remaking it. But I wrote that I had been moved by it and I thought it, you know, was visceral. It was very, very visceral. And I was thinking about like the cruelty of poverty and bullying and things like that. And then I tagged you because I was like, oh, this is where Joe jumps in and goes, what the fuck is wrong with you? Because only I could watch that movie and leave it going, oh, God, poor Leatherface. It's so sad. You know, it's like his poor face. Like, you know, and he's just surrounded by these horrible people that raised him in this culture. You know, like, what are you going to do?
Stop it.
Oh, gosh. You know, poverty is cruel. You know, and these kids roll into town like, yeah, we bought 2 pounds of weed in Mexico. And we're going front row tickets at Lynyrd Skynyrd. It's like, you know, fuck you guys. We're starving here. We resorted to killing tourists, you know, driving through to eat them because life sucks. That's the message.
No, that is not the So what you're saying is because this family lives in a food desert, like this whole Texas Chainsaw Massacre is just a giant metaphor for food deserts and food insecurity.
Well, that or vegetarianism.
Or vegetarianism, yeah,
which
yes.
I love when you were watching it, how you're like, man, this makes me want to like not eat meat. And I'm like, that could be one of the points. That actually is a reading of like the original film. I think even Tobe Hooper was like, yeah, this is a movie about meat. But a lot of people have shown it, like, I think PETA, others have, like, shown it as, like, this allegory about meat consumption, that it's this conversation about, like, why, like, the meat industry is terrible, why, like, you know, meat is murder, and, like, the humans in it represent, like, terrified animals, and when you watch the movie, you can get this, like, feeling about of what it's like to be a pig or a cow, like, that's what their life is every day, is poor Sally pushing her wheelchaired brother through the forest, being chased by a chainsaw wielding maniac. That is, you know, the animal experience. So when you brought that up, I was like, I don't even know if we discussed that on the original. Mm-mm. That was part of the conversation about, I mean, this was 5 years ago, so you know, we've talked about a lot of movies, a lot of different themes.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know, maybe it could still apply here. I mean, you know, I guess it's not as, it doesn't have as the explicit, like in the original, when they pick up the hitchhiker and he talks about like very explicitly, like, oh, you know, oh, they got a machine now that does like the job that my uncle used to do. And now they just do it with a machine. So he's out of work and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, or my brother or whatever. You know, so it's
but
like,
we still got to eat.
Right. Exactly. You know, so it's just this. Yeah. Anyways, I don't know how much like veracity there is in that. But again, anything that we talk about, themes and subtext of horror films, I mean, it's all, that's the point, right? It's all,
yeah,
we're gleaning,
yes,
meaning out of the underbelly of these horror films. But I did think that was interesting that you said that today, because I'm like, oh, that's right. I wanted to talk about it because I had just read an article from like 2 years ago that was like a reanalysis of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre as a vegan statement. And I was just like, oh, that's so perfect.
We're having tacos after this, right?
Right, exactly. carne asada Joseph, actually. Joseph asada would be what that is. What am I talking about? Not carne Joseph asada. It'd be Joseph asada.
That would be, that's my, is that my drag name? Carne Joseph asada.
Oh, man. my only other like note here, episiotomy with a chainsaw. Poor Morgan.
We just let that sit there. Like, yeah. It's like,
just throw that out there. Episiotomy with a chainsaw. I'm not sure men technically can have an episiotomy.
Some men.
Oh, that's true.
Some men could.
That's true. But I mean, I think Morgan is meant to be like a cis male. But I mean, whatever. No. He got just chainsawed up the groin.
And he's something queer happens to him where, like, you know, a man basically forces.
Yeah, that's a pretty intense scene with the sheriff and him. Yeah. And even tonight, like watching it, it was like, oh shit, I forgot. Because the guy, like when he comes in, he's like goofy, you know, making jokes and shit. But he, you know, it's like he's so fucking terrible, like, you know, molesting this corpse and like joking with these guys about, you know, what they've been doing to her, mm-hmm. you know, while he's feeling her up. And then he's just also saying all these other horrible, like goofy, you know, completely inappropriate things. So you're kind of thrown off. And then when he is really vicious, like he's really, really scary. And that whole sequence is very intense. Yeah. Oh, I tell you, I was just trying to Let me see. Let's see. Any other stray thoughts that you had?
Well, see, now I want to just revisit all of the old movies that those three men were in and see, and simultaneously be like disgusted because they probably weren't good.
Yeah, who knows? I do not, because I don't think I've seen any of these movies that you're talking about. Do you have any titles of any?
Jonathan Tucker was in a film called 100 Girls, where he plays a man who goes into like a sorority house, I think, and he has the best. There's a blackout in the house when he's in the elevator, and he has like a romantic night with a girl, but doesn't remember which girl. So he tries to find her in the house.
Okay. And this is Morgan.
That was Morgan. Yes. And then Mike Vogel was in a bunch of stuff.
Oh, I was going to say that I did like, I think we were talking a little bit about it because they don't have, I mean, they put like, I guess he's like the grandpa character in a wheelchair, but not one of the main cast. Mm-hmm. I did like that kind of change in the end where he can't walk and she has to like drag him through.
Yeah.
That also I felt like was very, very tense and really scary.
Yeah.
When I first saw it, and then hiding the house and the walls and I'm just like, oh man, yeah. This is like very, very creepy. Since you brought Tucker up again, I was like, oh, yeah. Right. I did want to say that. Yeah, again, this kind of kicked off a whole, which, I don't know, maybe there is something about, after 9/11 happened, and you kind of, the whole world, I think for a lot of young, because the last time we had like a quote-unquote like terrorist attack, I'm not saying what happened in 9/11 was really a terrorist attack to our conspiracy listeners, not the point, The point is that this event happened. The last time something like of that magnitude happened in the U.S. was what? Like Pearl Harbor? I mean, I know like the bombings, you know, but I mean for like terror, like a foreign terrorist attack was when?
I mean, the Trade Center was bombed in the 90s.
Oh, that's
but like
right.
Not probably foreign terrorist attack. I mean, terrorist attack period would have been the Oklahoma City bombing.
Okay, that's what. Yeah,
like terrorist attack period would have been that. And then prior to that, maybe Jonestown, but that's not terrorism. That's just, you know.
Well, again, I mean, yeah. Terrorism is one of those things where it's like, okay, well, what exactly do we mean by it? Because, like, domestic terrorism, like, I mean, white supremacy is terrorism.
Yeah.
That's, you know, we're seeing a lot going around. You know, I mean, I'm not trying to make light. I guess my conversation is more like, that inspires, like, invasion anxiety, you know?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
we
yeah,
talked
yeah.
about in the past, like, after Pearl Harbor, like, yeah. kind of, like, alien movies and things making the conversation of like the invasion anxiety. So I'm just trying to think about in the aftermath of 9/11 and because of the death like count of that, it was so, I think it was just, that was like the first thing in my life I remember being a really traumatic event.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And so I was trying to think, I mean, the Oklahoma City bombing, absolutely.
But definitely like 9/11.
Yeah.
Or no, definitely Pearl Harbor.
I think Pearl Harbor was probably the last really big event of like that kind of magnitude that matched like 9/11. And so I felt like there, you know, the anxiety of that, like the world really shifted for a lot of us, you know, I mean, at that age, you know, when, I mean, I was 17 or 18 when that happened, you know, it was just kind of like, it was a real like, whoa, the world, you know, kind of, mm-hmm. it was just a very interesting time in those few years. So it's like, I wonder about like the comfortability of like, I want to go see a new old movie, you know, and that kind of kicks off all of these remakes. I wonder if there's like something about that, you know, about just like, you know, I mean, I don't know, maybe it's just good old capitalism making a cash grab. Maybe, but people went to see them and you know, you like them or you don't or whatnot. But I was thinking about that earlier too. It's just like, man, there was a ton of remakes at that time. There was like a 10-year period. Or not even 10 years. I mean, between 2003 and like 2010, where just everything was like a remake of some 80s film, 70s, 80s movie that you loved, and now they've remade it. You know, it was just sort of like, I don't know, Hollywood terrorism of our childhood, but mining it and like giving us something that felt like, oh, I know this story, but it's being told differently, you know?
Yeah.
Anyways, I don't know. That's just a throwaway point that people are gonna be like, what are you talking about, Joshua? Just shut up. all right. Well, that's our, you know, again, we were having some fun today. I have been waiting to show that to you for a long time. Because I had saved it. I haven't watched it since we started Fright School. Even though I do really enjoy it, that's probably the 10th time I've seen it. Maybe more. I don't know.
I'd watch it again, but with you or in a group setting.
Yeah. I think it would be fun to do that sometime.
On the big screen would be good.
But I had forgotten about some of it. So rewatching it today, it felt like fresh. And so I just kind of got a new. I'm like, yeah, I enjoy the movie. I think it's very cynical. I think it's very indicative of a particular time here in American culture, you know, of what was going on, how we were feeling. It's just, you know, it's a very divisive film. For a very divisive populace. So, you know, there we go. Last thing I want to leave everybody with is, like, please check out this book. It was just released. It's called Creepy Bitches, Essays on Horror from Women in Horror, edited by Elise Wax and Rebecca McKendry, who we enjoy. And
come on the show.
Oh, yeah, I wish. That'd be so cool. Chelsea Stardust has an essay in here.
BJ Colangelo.
Yes, BJ. Rebecca, obviously. A bunch of just amazing women writing about horror, their experience in horror. I really like this because it's divided up into, you know, sort of different, obviously, you know, they're always kind of divided into sections, but there's like adolescence in horror, you know, horror as a lifestyle, horror and fandom, you know, facing your fears. It's just, and the first one, I guess, A Monster with Many Faces. I love the very first essay, Meteorites and the Hillbillies Who Poke Them. I mean, come on. This is a book you want to read. So I just wanted to say a little something about it because I've been enjoying reading it. I've been kind of bouncing around, reading a few of the essays in here. One of them wrote about her love of Elvira, so of course I had to read that. I had to read Chelsea's, which was great, about her the Halloween family. Mm-hmm. So sort of about her parents who loved Halloween and gave her that that love. And then there's Taking the Ick Out of Ichthyology, which is all about the
study of fish.
Yes, ichthyology is the study of fish, exactly. But this is about the Creature from the Black Lagoon trilogy. Gender in the Creature from the Black Lagoon trilogy. So this is like, I mean, the perfect book for Fright School, obviously. I mean, I would teach this, you know. It's really wonderful, and I did want to. I meant to mention it in the first part of the
in our A block.
Our A block. But I didn't because we got really sidetracked talking about, I don't even know what, I've already forgotten, but you just heard it, dear listener. And that's what we talked about instead of this book. But I did want to pump it because there's a lot of incredible minds involved in writing it. So please support it if you can find it. I think they're doing a signing soon in LA at Dark Delicacies. Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So anyways, there we go. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, 2003 remake. Yay, Summer of Horror, 2020, whatever year it is.
Yeah. be safe. Get vaccinated.
Yes, please. So we can come to cons again and see all of your faces.
Yes, we're in talks. So we want to continue to be in talks until we are there.
Yes. We are working on live events. So please let them happen. All right, Joe. Well, much horror love to you.
Much horror love to you, Joshua.
And you, dear listener. Good night.
Fright School is produced by Joshua Napier and Joe Farron.
Our intro was edited by Davey Boy Productions.
Our logo was designed by Jamie Channel Guzman.
Episodes are edited and engineered by Joe Farron.
Fright School is produced in terrifyingly beautiful San Diego, California.
Ha 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 ha